Smart Talk is produced by WITF as part of our mission to deliver relevant, high-quality programming. Support comes from Capital Blue Cross, which shares WITF's commitment to being a trusted resource in our communities. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC's orthopedics team, offering hip, knee, joint, spine, and back treatments. Learn more at upmc.com/centralpaortho.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvania's primary will be unique, considering how much money several candidates have spent to represent their parties in the November general election. And, of course, we've been seeing those TV commercials since January. In several ways, primaries are different than general elections anyway. Burwood Yost, the director of the Floyd Institute for Public Policy and the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall College, has written about this issue. Burwood Yost, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Scott. Good to be here.
All right, so let's kind of tick off some of these issues in ways that primaries are different than general elections. One of the big issues, or one of the big differences, is the number of voters that actually turn out to the polls. In primaries, voters normally don't turn out in great force, do they?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's one of the first issues we have in really understanding how the primaries are going to turn out. And that's also why, as I've talked about, I think, before with you, the polling is a little less variable in primary elections, in large part because you're just not sure what you're going to get in terms of turnout. So since 2000, in elections, even numbered years elections like this year, the average turnout among registered voters was about 28% of Republicans and 29% of Democrats. Now, that varies a whole lot depending on the election and how competitive a race might be. So, for instance, the highest turnout we've seen in any period this century was the Democratic primary for president in 2008, which pitted Barack Obama against Hillary Clinton. So that was almost 50% of registered Democrats. For Republicans, actually, the highest turnout we've ever seen was about 50% of Republicans in 2016 for that presidential primary. So, you know, in an off year like this, Scott, we'll probably get to 40%, maybe a little higher, since there's so much competition. But we'll have to see. I mean, a lot of that negative advertising in some of these races may have caused some confusion among voters, and that sort of thing can make them stay home.
You anticipated my next question, and as I said in the introduction, we've been seeing these commercials for months now, and quite frankly, I mean, just an observation is that I hear from voters and maybe even non-voters that they have fatigue from seeing those commercials, and those commercials have created a lot of confusion. I don't know. You would know the research much better than I do, Burwood, but often we hear that negative commercials, negative campaigns tends to drive down turnout. What do you think, what impact do you think that those commercials will have during this primary?
Well, Scott, I think that's a complicated kind of question, because while it's true that negative campaigning tends to suppress turnout, and in fact, sometimes campaigns use that as a tool, spending tends to increase turnout. And we've never had a primary where we've seen the kind of spending that we've seen in 2022. So I guess maybe we could say that with all the spending and all the options available to voters, we should see high turnout. But maybe it won't be quite as high as we expect, because the negativity in some of these campaigns may keep some voters at home.
The majority of those commercials have been negative. So maybe this is a test case for political science classes, Burwood, of, you know, what matters more, the negative content of those commercials or the amount of money being spent? And something else you just touched on. The impact of the sheer number of candidates that we have this year, especially on the Republican side, for governor and the U.S. Senate. I can't remember a year this late, going into the primary, the eve of the primary, where this many candidates have survived and will have their names on the ballot. Do we have any precedent for this, and do we know what to expect with it?
Well, we really don't have a precedent for this, where you've had not only a lot of candidates, but a lot of spending. The numbers are unprecedented. I mean, $70 million, I think, has been spent in the Senate races. A lot has been spent in the gubernatorial races. So yes, this is unprecedented territory. But, that said, all of our attention has been focused, I think, on the candidates and the spending and the, what's the consequences of these elections, right, which are all important things. But one of the reasons we wrote this article, my colleague Stephen Medvick and I, was we wanted to point out that there are other things operate in these primaries that can sometimes cause people to vote in certain ways. So one of the things that political scientists talk a lot about, Scott, are voter cues, things that help people make up their mind. The biggest cue of all in elections is obviously party. Now, in a primary like we have in Pennsylvania, where there are closed primaries for partisans, there are no party cues available. So voters need to rely on different things to make up their minds. And one thing we know for sure, Scott, is that ballot position can make a difference. Now, political science, as any study, you can imagine there's sometimes conflicting evidence. But I would say the preponderance of evidence is that being listed first on the ballot is those candidates tend to get more votes. And the longer the list of candidates, the less well those people perform who are lower on the list. And in Pennsylvania, as you know, it's just the luck of the draw, the order that you get on the ballot. But I think Kathy Barnett in the Senate race, the Republican race, Alex Khalil in the Democratic Senate race, and Lou Barletta in the Republican governor's race, they're all listed first, and that could perhaps help them. Now, being listed first tends to help a lot more in low-profile races, but I do think that people who are listed a little further down on the ballot may suffer just a bit. And the reason this is important, because you have so many candidates in the race, that every little bit may help or hurt. One thing, though, we do know, and this was the other thing that we covered in our little article, is that the county where someone lives can make a difference. In Pennsylvania, in our primaries, the candidate's name is accompanied by the name of the county where they live, and it is quite common, and we have some data to support this, that candidates tend to do much better in their home counties than they do in terms of the statewide share of the vote. And so this is important, because in some of these races, you've got candidates sharing the same county. So, for instance, there's 4 of the 7 Republican Senate primary candidates from Montgomery County. Only 1 is from Allegheny County. And, there's a lot of Republican votes in Allegheny County. And if things go true to form, the candidate with Allegheny County next to their name may expect to get close to 50% of the vote in that county. So that's typically what happens. And so, again, in a close race decided by a few percentage points, these little things can matter.
And that the candidate you're referring to with Allegheny County next to his name is David McCormick. And in a close race, which this is expected to be, you know, maybe that is that little push that someone like a McCormick would need. And, you know, I'm not making any kind of predictions or anything like that, but just to point out what you just said about the county residents being listed next to the candidate's name. Something else that you write about, and that is endorsements. You know, historically, traditionally, newspapers have been the place where many voters would go for their endorsement to see who the newspaper endorsed. Maybe I should put it this way. Newspapers endorse them. I don't know whether voters, you know, how much they counted on those. But nowadays, it makes a big difference sometimes, at least in the campaigns, to the campaigns, of who some of the other elected officials or some of the big names have endorsed. This year, maybe more so than others, with former President Donald Trump's endorsement. So talk about endorsements, if you would.
Well, again, we're talking about cues, things that can help voters make up their mind. And typically, if the party endorses in a primary, that's a pretty important cue that voters use. Now, once you get away from the party, things like, you know, media endorsements, they have probably little effect. But we do know that an endorsement in this case from President Trump can make a big difference in a Republican primary. I mean, we've seen all of the candidates try to seek out that endorsement. So, you know, we don't have any party endorsements outside of Josh Shapiro for the Democrats. And I think the lieutenant governor's race as well on the Democratic side. But, you know, the parties have kind of sat out these contested primaries, and that leaves a void. And I think in this circumstance, President Trump's endorsement is an important one. And again, if we're talking about things that can make a difference in a hotly contested primary where the winner may end up with 30% of the vote, that can be the difference maker.
You know, you mentioned that the state parties, the state committees on the Republican side haven't made endorsements this year. They've been criticized for that. And, you know, some political insiders have said that's one of the reasons that there are still so many candidates in the race, that not endorsing a candidate didn't separate out some of these candidates. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's true. I think if the parties had settled on a candidate in these races, you would have seen probably a smaller field. I think there are some, as we're seeing from recent news on the Republican side, that wish there had been an endorsement so that they could consolidate behind a more consensus traditional candidate. But that didn't happen. So I think we'd have seen something different, but that didn't happen, Scott. And so, you know, we sort of have this, you know, free-for-all, for lack of a better word. But again, I think, though, we also have to recognize that the party committees and the county committees represent their voters. And I don't think the voters have a clear consensus about what they want. And so maybe that's what was reflected in the choice not to endorse.
In your column, you and Dr. Medvick mentioned that because there are some things in primaries, those cues that you've talked about, that sometimes there are things that happen unexpectedly in a primary. You know, you can't predict unexpected, Burwood, but is there the possibility of something unexpected for Tuesday?
Yes, undoubtedly. I mean, this is why we wrote this article, because we really wanted to prepare people for the prospect that there are other things to think about than just who's ahead in the polls. We know that polls are variable, that we know that voters take a long time to make up their minds in primary elections. Many of them aren't paying attention. We know that regional turnout is going to have an effect. So there's so many things going on in this particular race that we think it's wise for everybody to expect that there will be things that might happen that we aren't anticipating. With that said, you know, we have seen movement in the polls that suggest that certain things are happening. And, you know, I think we can use that as one bit of information about what we might expect. But we should keep these other things in mind.
Berwood Yost is the director of the Floyd Institute for Public Policy and the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall College. Berwood, always good talking with you. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Have a good day.
WITF's election coverage is supported by the law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein & Lear, LLP. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.